They're increasing, and I would say it's a slow but steady increase. We're not great at statistics in Ireland, and that's something we're going to look at and see, can we start developing a better form of gathering information? Because that's often the question people will say, well, how many is information in? But at the moment, we know for a fact that there's at least 75 information, and that's from the statistics that have been returned. And that's 75 information at different stages. And that would be only priests, brothers and sisters, not diocesan priests. They're not included in those statistics.
And what are people's faith stories? And what would inspire people to join up or to have a vocation?
Well, when you talk to young people today, there's an awful lot of them beginning to go out to the mission countries, so to speak, as volunteers. And they're realising that there's more to life than what the consumer is offering. And I think this has stirred up an awful lot of questions for people. Well, you know, what makes the world tick? What's my faith? Where did I get my faith? Why did I not do anything after, say, confirmation? Because that's, I think, where a lot of people say that it stops at confirmation age. But yet, there's still an awful lot of young people who are going to Mass, who are in prayer groups, who are involved in music and ministry. And that's certainly on the increase. So, and I think they've got to be able to share those stories that they're of other people that they're meeting, and, you know, where they feel that could lead them in the future.
Would it be fair to say that their faith stories or that their vocation callings are maybe more genuine? And that's not to knock the people who had vocations in the past, but, you know, in the past it was maybe the only option. It was the only show in town, if you like. So maybe people went in if they had any inkling. Whereas now, if people feel they have a vocation, they're really, it has to be sincere, doesn't it? Because they're really going against the trend. It's very counterculture, if you like.
Yeah, I think it is counterculture, but I'm not sure if I would agree that it's any more real. I think it was very real in the past too, but probably we'd be a bit more selective now, and it wouldn't be as easy for people to hide as it was in the past. People might have gone into religious life and still do, because they're running away from something, but it's not so easy to remain in the congregations because of psychological assessments and because of the process of discernment. And we'd be really encouraging a long process of discernment before people make a final commitment. You know, so I think it's it was very real in the past too. Yes, there was this thing of the first son or the first daughter, and when you go through the history of the church, that was the way it was, you know. But at the end of the day, it's God that calls, and that's never changed. So God called in the past, God is calling now, and God will call in the future. We don't know how that call might translate. And we don't know how those calls are going to blossom, but we have to be open to them, you know. So it's the work of the Spirit, it's the work of God, and it's a call from God.
Do you ever have difficulties where maybe somebody feels they have a calling, but somebody else is looking at their psychological profile and saying, well, maybe you need to think about that? And how do people address that? How do people get over that challenge?
Well, when people talk about entering religious life, I would always say to people, be prepared to be disappointed, because you might think you have a call, but that doesn't mean to say that God has actually called you and it's something that you have to work through. It's like when you fall in love and you meet a fella and you think, oh, he's great, and that's the one for me. And you might go out with him for a few months, maybe even 6 months, and then you realise, well, it's not all that I thought it was going to be. And so you've got to be prepared to be disappointed. But that doesn't mean to say that you don't try. So if you think you have a call, you go for it. And you work with those who are experienced in discernment and will accompany you through the discernment process. And hopefully that person who's accompanying you will help you to see what's right, what's not so good, why wouldn't it be good for you, or why would it be good for you? So it's been open, and being open to the Spirit. And if you are really looking at a call, you're looking at it with honesty, and you don't want to go into something that's not suitable for you, because you won't be happy at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, so I suppose it's about trying to find a good fit.
Yeah, exactly. And for many people, it's It could be the draw to being a missionary that has pulled them in, or it could be the draw to working in education. But that doesn't mean to say that they've got the religious aspect, that they've got that they're able to give this complete life to God, and you know, everything that entails.
But a lot of the things that religious are doing these days can now be done also as a layperson. Yeah. So what makes that extra difference?
It's the relationship, their relationship with God, and prayer is, you know, paramount to that. And, you know, those I've spoken to in the past who have entered religious life, that's the thing that's really drawn them. It's having that relationship with God, it's having the deep prayer life, and that's where they have found that the connection has been for them, you know. And I think that's really important.
And so maybe just to talk about the logistics and how will the cafe work. You're going to have 3 speakers. Will it work as a regular cafe? Will people, you know, order a cake and a bun and sit down and have a chat? Or is it more of a formal talk?
No, it'll be very informal. And it kind of came out of the idea of the original speed dating thing, where people had an opportunity to come and meet with different people. But we didn't want to do anything gimmicky. So we came up with the Sisters Cafe idea, which is that we just ask people to come and hang out with us and have a coffee with us and hear the stories. So the structure of the night will be, the people will be welcomed into the space and just generally chit-chat. And then we'll have maybe 2 sisters. We have 3 sisters giving a talk. So one is going to talk about what was it like for her to have a vocation. Where did her vocation, how did it grow? Second one is a sister who's been on the missions for many years, and to tell her story of missionary life. And the third one is a sister who has worked in the area of chaplaincy in a public hospital. So there'll be two talks, and then a break for coffee and just general mingling around, have a chat with each other. And then the third talk, and then time for questions and answers if anybody wants to ask any questions. And then hopefully from there we'll find out, well, did this work for you? Would you like to see more of this? What kind of things would you like to do at this kind of space, in this conversation space? Are there particular topics that you might like to explore together, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would hope that if this is successful, that we'll start replicating this around the country in different places.
So your first one, the upcoming one, is on February the 25th. It's in the Dominican Adult Education Centre on Mount Marion Avenue, and it's 7 to 8:30. This is a one-off, but you're hoping it'll turn into a regular thing.
Yes, exactly. And it was because Sister Adele Murphy from the Dominicans, when we were working this together, she was very kind to offer the space there. Because you want somewhere that's easy access, you know, and that it's warm, and it's hopefully a bit friendly. and it's a difficult one because you don't really know what numbers to expect. We might only get 1, we might get 5, we might get 15, 50. You just don't know. So being open to that.
There's no RSVP. It's just people either turn up on the night or they don't turn up on the night.
Yeah, I mean, there is a telephone number there, and they can access the website and they can access email. So if people want to contact us and say they're coming, that's fine, perfectly okay. But we don't want to put people under pressure either, and we want to leave it as open as possible. And if it means it's only the sisters that are there gathering, well, so be it. That's no harm either, because it's good for the sisters to hear each other's story as well.
Yeah. That's another issue too, isn't it? That sort of renewed sense of vocation, because you can have had a vocation, but then so much has changed within the church that maybe there are people who question that original vocation or have to renew their vocation, if you like.
That's very true. And I think it's good for congregations to share their stories and to share, why were they founded in the first place? Does that still remain very much key today, or have they had to change their way of thinking? When you look at those who are founded for education, maybe to run specific schools, but they might be doing something else, like the Presentation Sisters. They're very much involved in education, and they've got a great project now where they're working with young people who can't access second level education, never mind third level. They're running the first online secondary education programme, which is wonderful. So again, this is where sisters and indeed priests and brothers have used their initiative and said, right, well, how can we turn this around? How can we be of help? And I think that's important.